ESPN College Football Podcast.
Hello and welcome into the ESPN College Football Podcast. The off-season digital reporter takeover continues. I'm your host, Adam Rittenberg, joined by my friend and colleague, Mark Schlabaugh. We'll be breaking down spring ball and other things for you here over the podcast. And, you know, Mark, it's a big day in college basketball with the Sweet 16 starting tonight. You know, Duke and Mike Krzyzewski with potentially his final game going against Texas Tech. I'll be covering the Sweet 16 here in Chicago, but on Friday and Sunday. It's also a big week in spring football, though, around college football with Alabama opening spring practice, USC earlier this week opening spring practice. A lot of pro days are happening. CJ Stroud at Ohio State was throwing passes to some of their pro prospects earlier, I believe, on Tuesday. What has caught your eye so far? You know, I know it's still relatively early for many major teams around college football, but spring football is off and running. And what's kind of catching your eye?
Really just turnover at the top with Georgia, losing so much off that record-setting defense, so much off the coaching staff with four guys moving on, which you typically see after a team wins a national championship. People try to go get the secret sauce. And, how does Kirby put it back together? Alabama's loaded. I think they're the team to beat. I had them number one in my way too early top 25 back in early January. Gonna have to replace the two-star receivers, but added Jermaine Burton from Georgia, picked up Gibbs, the star running back from Georgia Tech. And of course, you know, Lincoln Riley at USC, evidently the greatest spring football practice in the history of college football in more than 100 years out there in LA. Attention is going to be on Lincoln and the Trojans all year.
Yeah, we'll get to USC in just a minute, but I wanted to start with Alabama because they've had a couple of workouts in Bryce Young, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner, spoke earlier this week. You know, you mentioned some of the transfers that they added on offense and, you know, bringing back Young, bringing back some of their good pieces up front, their top tight end returns. What are the areas, I guess, that Alabama still needs to grow in your mind? They bring back the best defensive player in the country and Will Anderson Jr., who will be a Heisman Trophy candidate going into the fall. But where do they need to get better in order to win that national championship? Because I agree with you, they are the number one team right now. And I doubt that will change going into the season.
I think just depth at wide receiver, experience at wide receiver. We saw what happened when Jameson Williams went down in the national championship game against Georgia. They were already missing John Metchie, the third, who was hurt against Georgia in the SEC championship game. And then none of those other guys really stepped up. Ja'Cory Brooks, JoJo Earl, A.G. Hall, Trayshawn Holden, all those guys have to really develop and become go-to receivers for Young. Obviously, Jermaine Burton, guy from Georgia, has got a lot of experience, did not get the targets and the production he was looking for at Georgia. So we'll see if he makes more of an impact at Alabama.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see on defense just how they look. What's interesting is that Alabama actually has a little bit of coordinator continuity for the first time in a while with their primary offensive and defensive coordinators returning. They do have a bit of coaching change. Doug Marrone's no longer the O-line coach there, but Bill O'Brien's back. And Bryce Young earlier this week talked about, you know, working with O'Brien for a second consecutive year in their relationship. I think a lot of us, at least I did, I don't know where you're at on this, Schlapp, I thought Bill O'Brien would be back in the NFL or maybe getting a college head job at Michigan or somewhere else this year. But in fact, he is back at Alabama. Does that matter for them? I mean, they've shown, Nick Saban's shown better than anyone that you can lose coordinators and not miss a beat and still win national titles. But the fact that both Bill O'Brien and defensive coordinator Pete Golding are returning, how does that affect Alabama in your mind?
I mean, it can only help. I mean, it has been a revolving door over there in terms of the coaching staff for a long time. Like I said earlier with Georgia, I mean, Alabama would lose 6-7 guys off of staff, A, because of the success, and B, because I think Nick Saban is so demanding to work for, and guys look for opportunities to get out the door sometimes sooner than other places. Pete Golding, the defensive coordinator, I think he did a much better job last year. I think going into last year, if you ask a lot of Alabama people, they thought maybe he was on the hot seat. You know, they lose Joe on the back end at corner. They lose Jordan Battle on the back end of the defense at safety. Was really a great player for him. Mathis, their defensive end. You know, Will Anderson is so good. I don't know that they were as productive up front as they have been in the past. You know, Georgia was kind of the team with the depth and production on the defensive line. So they needed some guys to step up on the front seven. Added Eli Ricks, corner from LSU, who was really highly regarded coming out of high school. You know, he could be a plug and play guy for Joe, but we'll see. Like I said, I think they're the team to beat. I think Georgia and Alabama both, again, will have a chance to go unbeaten during the regular season. Bama gets an early trip to Texas on September 10th. They're at Arkansas, at Tennessee, at LSU, at Ole Miss. So they got some difficult road games, but I think talent-wise, they're the best team in the league.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Let's get to Georgia, though. You're obviously close to that program, and you know they do lose a lot on defense. Now, they've recruited better, I think, than anyone in the country on that side of the ball. And even though Dan Lanning's off to Oregon and they open season against Dan Lanning in Oregon, you know, Will Muschamp's there, Kirby Smart's obviously there. So they should be fine from a coaching and schematic standpoint on defense. But when you look at that unit and that next wave that's stepping in, you know, what kind of interests you the most there? Because, you know, I think we could talk about the offense as well and the quarterback situation with Stetson Bennett returning. But, you know, to me, it's how do you replace all that production, especially in the front seven, you know, for Georgia? Maybe they'll rely a little bit more on their back end this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think the questions start up front. Obviously, you lose Jordan Davis, Trayvon Walker, Devontae Wyatt, three guys who are probably going to go in the first round of the NFL draft and just absolutely blew people away at the combine earlier this month. You know, as good as those guys are, you talk to a lot of people around the league, you talk to scouts in the NFL, they think Jalen Carter might be the most talented out of all of them. I think he's a preseason All-American. I think he's going to have a huge impact. Any guys like Zion Logue and Tramell Waldauer and Nazir Stackhouse, guys that were highly recruited and played a little bit last year. They're going to get a lot of opportunities this spring. You know, it's not only the defensive line, though, and they lose N'Kobe Dean, one of the best linebackers they've ever had, Channing Tindall, Quay Walker, you know, those are three veteran guys. You're basically losing your entire front seven outside of Jalen Carter. So Muschamp and Glenn Schumann definitely have their work cut out for them. But like you said, Georgia's recruited as well as anybody. Don't know it's going to be plug and play, but they've got talent behind those guys at left.
Yeah, and that's exciting because these other guys haven't had a chance, and they're going to start, obviously, the spring, get to see a little bit more of them, especially in the spring game. And then as we get closer to the season, there's this new wave of, you know, again, five-star players, high-level guys who will probably be in the NFL in the near future. On the quarterback side, I was just thinking about it, Mark. You know, I remember covering a Georgia-Ole Miss game in Kirby's first year when he, you know, didn't have his imprint on the program. And it was Jacob Eason at quarterback. And then it was, you know, Jacob Eason against Jake Fromm. And then it was Jake Fromm and Justin Fields. And now it's Stetson Bennett, who won them their first national title in my lifetime, which I love pointing out to you. He's back, but so are other guys that were more highly recruited than Stetson Bennett. And maybe in the minds of some have a higher ceiling than Stetson Bennett, but where do you see that evolving, the quarterback spot? You know, we won't know obviously until the season begins, but you know, they're out there this spring. What are you hearing? What do you think is going to happen just as Georgia gets closer? And to point out, like we did with Alabama, you know, Todd Monken is returning as the offensive coordinator and play caller, who I think he's done a terrific job there. You know, he's a guy that, you know, you heard some whispers, would he go back to the NFL? Would he maybe pursue a head coaching opportunity instead? He's also back in Athens, and so, you know, he's working with, you know, Bennett and some of those other quarterbacks.
Yeah, you know, there was a lot of speculation during the playoff and after the championship game that Malkin might go back to the NFL because he doesn't like to recruit. But I think he's, you know, he did a tremendous job and really diversified the offense. I think it's Stetson Bennett's team. I'm not sure that I've ever seen a guy lead a team to a national championship after 41 years and half the fan base be pissed off because he came back. I mean, it's pretty remarkable, but you know, he's not the biggest guy in the world. He doesn't have the greatest arm in the world, but he completed 64.5% of his passes with 29 touchdowns and 7 interceptions and largely avoided big mistakes to get them into trouble. He didn't have to do a lot because the defense was so good, but I don't think he gets nearly enough of credit for his mobility. And there were a lot of times last year, particularly against Florida and against Alabama in the championship game, where his mobility got him out of trouble. And is, you know, for as good as JT Daniels might have been, he didn't have the mobility that Stetson had. They really like Brock Vandegrift. Struggled a little bit early last year in practice, as most freshmen do, just picking up the offense and picking up the scheme and reading defenses. He got better at the end of last year. I'm told Carson Beck some action last year. I think he attempted about 25 passes. He's got one of the bigger arms in on the team, but, you know, just hasn't had the opportunity to really show what he can do. And I know they really like Gunnar Stockton, a true freshman out of Raven County, Georgia, who was one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the country. So there's competition, but I would be surprised if Stetson Bennett's not starting against Oregon.
Yeah, I mean, Kirby Smart loves Stetson Bennett. I mean, I think you can see in the comments he's made about Stetson over the years. I think he loves his story. I think he bristles a little bit at some of what you're talking about, this constant doubting of a guy who got it done or helped you get it done in the biggest moment. But from what you know about Kirby, and you've known him for a long time, Mark, you know, and he kind of faced a similar situation with Jake Fromm and Justin Fields, Justin being the guy who is the higher rated recruit and in the minds of a lot of Georgia fans, you know, the more talented guy, the guy that could take him to the next level. Will he look at it the same way if one of those guys you mentioned, whether it's Vandegrift or Beck, or maybe not Stockton this year, but maybe it will be, if one of those guys really shows out this spring, how does that factor into Kirby's decision? Because, you know, ultimately he has to evaluate his talent, and ultimately he's got to make decisions on who gives him the best chance to win. And so is it just defaulted to Bennett, or could one of those guys honestly replace him just with performance?
I think if somebody outperforms him in practice, I don't think Kirby or Todd Monken would hesitate to go with the other guy. But, you know, Stetson, you got to remember last summer and last spring, he didn't get a ton of reps. JT Daniels was the expected starter. Stetson said earlier this week he didn't want to take reps away from JT. But, you know, he gets a full offseason, another year in Monken's system. You know, I think certainly he should be better this coming season than he was last year. You know, if they get some receivers back, and if Eric Gilbert is a factor and Darnell Washington's a bigger factor, and some of the receivers that were hurt last year rebound, you know, I think he's going to have better weapons around him on the perimeter. But, you know, it's not as much about what Kirby believes and Todd Monken believes as much about what those kids in the locker room believe, those guys, you know, that are playing with Stetson Bennett. And I think you heard a lot of guys speak up last year when the fan base was kind of taking their shots at him, saying this is the guy we believe in, this is the guy we think can win for us. And I think it was kind of the same way with Jake Fromm. You know, Jake Fromm took Georgia to the national championship game as a freshman. And even though Justin Fields was the number one quarterback prospect in the country, I think most Georgia guys wanted Fromm on the field.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens with JT Daniels. Our colleague Pete Thamel reporting that he's looking at Oregon State, I think it's Missouri and West Virginia. So kind of an odd group of teams. Next stop for JT after starting his career at USC and then you know, being on the bench for the national championship game at Georgia after a decent season, a bridged season, but a decent season the year before. I wanted to ask you about this idea of quarterback fatigue, though, Mark, because it seems to happen more and more now at these big time programs. You mentioned Stetson Bennett at Georgia, who obviously won the biggest thing you can win in college football is a national championship. But I also experienced it a little bit when Sean Clifford returned at Penn State. You know, multi-year starter, has set a bunch of records there. I thought had a pretty decent season last year. Unfortunately, had that injury against Iowa that cost Penn State in some ways that game. But, you know, Penn State fans are so excited about Drew Aller, who's their most decorated quarterback recruit probably since Christian Hackenberg. They want to see Drew Aller on the field, but Sean Clifford's there. And so there's this kind of weird reaction when you have experienced, record-setting in some cases, quarterbacks who decide to stay and fans are like done with them already. I mean, what do you think that is? Is that just the world we're in with recruiting, or is it just more specific to these situations we're talking about?
Yeah, I think each situation is different. But I mean, look at what Keaton Slovis did at USC, and fans couldn't wait for him to leave and transfer to somewhere else so Caleb Williams could play.
Right.
I just think it's what have you done for us lately? Immediate satisfaction, immediate production, and it's hard on these kids, but it is what it is. It's what comes with playing quarterback in college football nowadays.
You mentioned Caleb Williams. He is on the field for the first time as a USC Trojan in spring practice. I don't know if you saw the video of him running the practice field the other day. He took a wrong turn and then was directed where he was supposed to go, which was pretty funny. You mentioned some of the hyperbole around USC with their spring ball getting underway. Again, my interest there is much more on the defensive side. I think Caleb Williams is going to be really good. I think they have a good group of skill around him. They're going to need to get better on the offensive line. But if they don't get better on defense, they're probably a little bit better than .500 team next year. I don't see them, winning 10 or 11 games unless they make some major strides under coordinator Alex Grinch. For you, what's most interesting at USC this spring? Is it the Caleb Williams story? And he's obviously already an NIL star and these expectations for him to be in the mix for the Heisman this year? Or are there other parts of that team and situation that interest you?
Obviously, Caleb Williams and Lincoln Riley are going to be the guys that everybody looks to. But I agree with you on the defense. I mean, USC led the Pac-12. In total offense last year, they led the Pac-12 in passing. They were fifth in scoring. They just couldn't stop anybody. And that's why they were 4-8. Grinch did a really good job at Oklahoma. When he took over that Oklahoma defense, they were atrocious. The memories of that Bedlam game where I sat next to Jake Trotter in Stillwater have never left my brain. I've never seen a major college football rivalry game being played as two-hand touch, which is basically – what it was. And Oklahoma's defense was pretty good the last couple of years. All five starters gone and the top five starters players gone in the secondary. Chris Steele, Isaac, Taylor Stewart, in addition to Williams and Mario Williams, the receiver, they brought in some pretty key transfers on defense with Latrell McCutcheon from Oklahoma, Blackman from Colorado, and both those guys might be in line to start a corner. So we'll see what Grinch is able to do. 11th in the league last year in scoring defense, 8th against the run, 9th in passing. I mean, it's got to get better. It's not going to make a difference.
Yeah, and I'm curious, can a guy like Corey Foreman, who is a national recruit, top five recruit, start to break out this year? Is there somebody else up front who they can start to rely on to create pressure? Because it's the Pac-12. It's not the SEC. It's not the Big Ten. But USC always plays a competitive schedule. And, I think there's going to be some teams. You look at UCLA, for example, really good quarterback situation with DTR back. You look at Utah, Cam Rising is back. Arizona's quarterback situation with Jaden Delora transferring in from Washington State is going to be a solid one. I think Washington is a really interesting program with Kalen DeBoer, a guy that I followed for a number of years as their new coach, and he's had a really good track record at quarterback. So, I am really interested to see. Again, I don't think USC is going to make the playoff this year. Could they win the Pac-12? Sure, that's a pretty winnable league. But to me, it's about the progress they make on defense so that when they go into what likely will be Caleb Williams' final season in college, they can make a real push to be on the national radar, which everybody expects with Lincoln Riley as the head coach. Wanted to ask you too, Mark, I believe Oklahoma, the team that Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams and Mario Williams and McCutcheon and all those guys left, they also began spring practice this week. And I'm really interested to see how this evolves for Brent Venables and that program, because I know there was a lot of, there still are a lot of bad feelings around how Lincoln Riley left and even towards Caleb Williams. But I think that this hire has the potential to help Oklahoma close that gap that we saw they were unable to under Lincoln Riley. And that's because even though Alex Grinch, like you mentioned, did a nice job defensively, they never took that step. They never became a top 10 defense. And I think the way the Big 12 is changing, that was one of the more underrated storylines in the country last year, that the Big 12 went from that unwatchable product that you mentioned in Bedlam to Oklahoma State, top five defense, Baylor, really good on the defensive side. Iowa State's always been a good defense. What do you think Brent Venables can do starting in this spring practice to get Oklahoma closer to winning a national championship? Because we saw they could make the playoff under Lincoln Riley. Unfortunately for Riley and for the Sooners, they were unable to advance. And so that's why I think there's a really good opportunity there.
Yeah. I mean, they lost seven starters on both sides of the ball. So there's going to be some attrition. I'm really curious to see what Venables does. I wondered if he would ever leave Clemson. I think he was there for 10 seasons. So he's had other opportunities. It's going to be interesting to see if they can just pick up where they left off. There are a lot of OU fans that say he's a better coach than what Lincoln was, and Lincoln had kind of reached the ceiling and he got him to the playoff, but he couldn't win a semifinal game, which is pretty ridiculous. But, Dillon Gabriel did a really nice job at UCF before he got hurt. It's a good fit with Jeff Levy, the OC, who was down at UCF when he was there. It comes down to defense again. I think with them and Texas, as Texas continues its rebuild under Steve Sarkisian, as they get closer and closer to joining the SEC, I think they both realize they have to get better. They have to get more depth on both lines of scrimmage, and you're going to have to play some defense to compete in the SEC. So that may have gone into Joe Castiglione's thinking when he hired Venables to replace Lincoln Riley.
Yeah, I like the way that search went, in the sense that the two names that we heard about, well, really three, were Venables and Dan Lanning. And then you heard about Matt Campbell, of course, at Iowa State. And even though Matt's more of an offensive guy, Iowa State's played terrific defense for a number of years there under John Haycock. So it felt like defense was front of mind for Joe C and the Oklahoma brass as they were looking to replace Lincoln Riley. I think that's the right way to go. I mean, you and I grew up with Oklahoma known as being a defensive program. I mean, I've had this conversation with Dusty Dvorak many times over the years, that when's the last time Oklahoma had a defensive player who intimidated you, who opponents would fear? Man, we got to stay away from that guy. I mean, it's been a long, long time. And let's not forget, the last time they did win a national championship, it was because of their defense and because of a defensive-oriented coach in Bob Stoops. So I'm excited to see, like you said, a lot to replace this year. You're probably not going to be a real factor nationally this year, but I think Brent Venables could be the guy to get them there sooner than later, although the move to the SEC is going to be a factor. Mark, a year ago, none of us were talking about Michigan as a playoff contender. And, Michigan's been in spring practice for a number of weeks now. They're actually wrapping up, I believe, next Saturday, the same day as the Final Four, their spring ball. So it's gone. They're pretty into it already. Had some injuries or guys that have been held out of spring. JJ McCarthy not doing very much as a quarterback. He'll probably compete for the starting job in preseason camp with Cade McNamara. I'm just curious your thoughts on where Michigan is. You had the Jim Harbaugh flirtation with the NFL. He's back. He promoted Matt Weiss to co-offensive coordinator alongside Sherrone Moore. He's hired a new defensive coordinator and Jesse Minter coming over from Vanderbilt. Is Michigan a team that we are going to be talking about again as a potential playoff contender, or is there another team that's on the field right now for spring ball that has a potential to make that jump?
I had a vibe in my way too early. That was before Mike McDonald left. Their defensive coordinator did a fantastic job last year. They lose Hutchinson, they lose Ojabo, they lose Haskins, Ross, Hawkins, Gray, Hill. They lose so much, so many playmakers that were really the nucleus of that rebound team last year. I mean, as good as they were, 12-2, you kind of knew the opening drive of the Georgia game, they weren't going to keep it close. I think athletically, they're still behind the very best teams in the country. But, I give Harbaugh credit. I criticized the heck out of him when they struggled. And I didn't think he'd be able to get it done, but maybe if he's done flirting with the NFL, maybe he does get it turned around. I still think they're the second best team in the Big Ten going into next year behind Ohio State, even though they beat Ohio State last year.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think given what they lost and what Ohio State brings back, I mean, I don't know about you. I don't think there's a better triple threat, talking about quarterback, running back, receiver in the country, than C.J. Stroud at quarterback, Jackson Smith and Jigba at wide receiver, and Travion Henderson, who will be a true sophomore at running back, all back for the Buckeyes. And, you know, again, given what their history, it's kind of like Oklahoma. You know, Ohio State's got a proud history on the defensive side of the ball that they're trying to recapture this year, you know, with a new play caller in Jim Knowles, who came over from Oklahoma State, did a tremendous job with Mike Gundy and that staff, and getting them to start winning with defense. And so I think Ohio State absolutely, it remains the team to beat, even though Michigan didn't just beat them. They dominated them. They overwhelmed them. And that'll give Michigan confidence when they go into the shoe this year, even though Ohio State will be a little bit motivated to avenge that loss. Before we move on, there are a couple things I want to mention. First, before you sit down to watch the Sweet 16, check out Bald Men on Campus with Jay Billis, LaFonso Ellis, and Seth Greenberg. This week, they recorded a first weekend recap and a second recap look ahead. And they'll be back next week with two new episodes. Follow Bald Men on Campus wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, watch NBA Today at 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app. You can also listen to the show as a podcast. Mark, I wanted to ask you about Pro Day as well. I mentioned C.J. Stroud was the quarterback stand-in for Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson and Jeremy Ruckert and some of the other Buckeyes that were on the field in Pro Day. Also, Ole Miss, you know, Matt Corral working out for the first time since his injury in the Sugar Bowl. Kenny Pickett at Pitt was working out earlier this week for scouts. Same with Malik Willis at Liberty. You know, it's not the quarterback class that we've had in recent years. Certainly not the Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, and others class from last year. But what are you most interested in, just as we get closer to the NFL draft with some of these pro days, especially at the quarterback position? But you can really go any direction with it, because there's obviously a really good tight end group and some other spots that are strong.
Yeah, I guess the biggest question at quarterback is Malik Willis really that good?
Yeah.
Or is he just the first guy off the board and the Steelers have to grab a quarterback? You know, he didn't have the year I think some people thought he would have at Liberty, but, you know, I think he's still really talented. And Corral, the injury, you know, how much of a setback is that for him? Is Evan Neal really the number one pick in the draft? You know, I think he struggled a little bit last year, and he would tell you that, but, you know, we'll see. There's with all the trades that have happened, it's going to shake it up to what NFL teams' priorities are. You know, what are the Falcons look for after trading Matt Ryan? Is it just the top guy off the board? You know, Kansas City all of a sudden needs a big play receiver. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, you know, Todd McShay wrote about the different pro day performances from the quarterback, and, you know, his takeaway from Willis is that he's only getting better, that, you know, his areas of concern are starting to show some improvement. And that's why I think someone is going to take him, because there's a chance, you know, if you give him a year or so to develop, that he becomes a star. I'm just very interested to see, you know, I keep looking back to like the Josh Allen year, and there was a lot of skepticism around Allen and would he ever be a great NFL quarterback? And that's obviously been proven wrong, because he's been outstanding. And I'm wondering if do you look at a Willis, a Kenny Pickett, a Matt Corral, you know, one of these other quarterbacks that we're discussing, Desmond Ridder, you know, whose pro day is actually today as we're recording at Cincinnati. Can one of those guys, you know, maybe be that Josh Allen that maybe people are a little split on or not so sure about going into the draft, but is in the right system and develops and becomes a star in the league?
I mean, Kenny Pickett, you know, people have questions about his hand size, which just seems ridiculous to me. He threw for, what, 4,000 yards at Pitt last year. You know, he's going to be a top 15 pick. He's going to be the first or second quarterback off the board. And I never had any doubts about Josh Allen. I went out to Wyoming before his junior season, and the dude was huge. It was like when I was in New Orleans last fall at one of Arch Manning's games, and the guy next to me on the sideline said, "How do you know if he's any good playing against this competition?" Because Isidore Newman is a really small class AA, I think, class 2 private school in New Orleans. And I said, "I don't know, man. He's 6'4", he's 225 pounds, and his last name is Manning. I think I'd take my chances."
Right.
I mean, Pickett Josh Allen looked the part. You know, it's not a great quarterback class. You know, I guess Corral could go late in the first round, but it's going to be a ton of D linemen off the board for sure.
Yeah, no, it'll be fun to watch going forward. Had a chance to go to the combine a few weeks ago and just talk to some coaches and see some of the prospects working out in the hallways of the convention center there. So it's always a fun time of year. Yeah, Mark, I'm just curious. You've covered a lot of spring footballs over the years. Do you kind of put a lot of weight on spring games or on what you're hearing from coaches? Is it not as significant of a period of time versus the preseason? There's obviously the transfer portal component now, which has changed so much in college football because there could be guys. I mean, just talk about JT Daniels. Where is he going to go? Has not made a decision yet. Emory Jones at Florida is now officially, in the portal and looking around as a former starter for the Gators. Where is he going to go next? So I guess what value do you put on spring ball? And within that, what parts of spring ball are most important elements of spring ball that kind of stand out most to you?
You know, I think nowadays it's more of an audition. It's an audition for coaches to see younger guys to figure out, do we need to go out of safety in the portal? Do we need to go add another receiver? You saw Georgia do that last year with a couple of guys out of the transfer portal. If you're, a number two quarterback or a guy battling for a quarterback job, if you don't win, how quickly do you jump in the portal to go somewhere else? I think we're going to see another wave of kids enter the portal in mid-April, late April, guys that aren't happy with how many reps they got in the spring. And, so I think just the roster management, the personnel decisions you're making between now and the start of the season, I think spring ball has a big impact on that. But I've never put a huge amount of weight on what happens in spring ball. I can remember back in the 90s. I won't remember his name, but Georgia had a transfer running back from a California junior college. Odell Collins ran for like 200 yards in the spring game, and I think he pulled his hamstring doing laundry the next preseason and never played. So.
You don't want to take too much away from it. Yeah. The spring game, actually, that might be a good story idea. The spring game all-stars, all-time all-stars, because a lot of them don't end up translating. But sometimes you do. I remember, Michael Thomas at Ohio State had a big spring game maybe a year before he became, obviously a big deal for the Buckeyes and then went on to the NFL. So sometimes you get a few clues. I mean, for me, it's really the new coaches, right? I mean, you get Brian Kelly. They're starting spring ball this week at LSU. I know they had some bad weather down there earlier this week, but they're going to be on the field. Billy Napier at Florida, I think, is a really interesting new coach to watch. Dan Lanning at Oregon, I think they're in their second week of spring ball. Fascinated to see what he does there, especially at the quarterback spot with Auburn transfer Bo Nix and Ty Thompson, who is a decorated recruit in the program. Kalen DeBoer, who I just mentioned at Washington. You got Tony Elliott at Virginia, the former longtime Clemson offensive coordinator. Is there a new coach that you're most interested to see how this first spring goes in terms of what he says, how he manages things, how his team looks coming out of the spring?
Yeah, I mean, Marcus Freeman at Notre Dame, he coached in the bowl game and it got away from him in the second half. But I mean, how can you not be impressed with that guy and the recruiting momentum he's already building and just the cultural changes he wants to make? Mario Cristobal at Miami is another guy that seemed to have a lot of the pieces in place. Miami finally seems like they're willing to make a financial commitment to make that program competitive again. He's a South Florida guy, played there, is a great recruiter. It's going to be harder and harder for teams like Alabama and Georgia and others to go down into the 305 and get players. And, Van Dyke was a really good quarterback last year. Talking about kids who might transfer, what happens to Jake Garcia? Does he see an opportunity somewhere else after the spring? And certainly wasn't a kid that was afraid to jump around in high school. So, It'll be curious to see what happens down in Coral Gables.
Yeah, it's such an interesting one. Obviously, you followed the Garcia situation closer than anyone in high school. And yeah, I know he made a really positive impression last year, unfortunately got injured early in the season, but he's a high level guy who I just can't see necessarily waiting maybe 2 years if Tyler Van Dyke continues on the trajectory that he's on after a really impressive freshman season for the Hurricanes. They got Josh Gattis from Michigan in as their new coordinator. And, you know, I owe Mario Cristobal a bit of an apology. I was kind of a hater in terms of how they were hiring their staff. It just seemed to be taking forever and they were losing guys. And he did put together a very impressive coaching staff at the end with guys like Gattis and Kevin Steele and Charlie Strong and others. So yeah, very interesting spot to watch for the Canes. And they've been practicing now for a couple of weeks. Well, Mark, every week on the College Football Podcast, we're doing a letter. And as we get closer to, you know, really the ramp up to the preseason and the 2022 college football year. And so today's letter is the letter I. And so it forces you to think about the area of the country I live in, because the teams that represent the letter I are mostly around here, talking about Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Iowa State. So mostly Big Ten. We got a Big 12 team in there as well. And the one I wanted to start off with actually is Iowa, because Iowa made the Big Ten championship game last year. They were not overly competitive in that game, but they were a highly rated team for much of the season, really good defensively again. But, you know, we're talking about these quarterback situations. They have a real issue on their hands because they don't have, I think, a clear number one guy as they kick off spring practice. But I still would probably put them as the favorite to repeat in the West Division and maybe make some noise nationally. I'm curious how you look at them, you know, coming into this year, you know, given their, you know, their success at certain positions, but, you know, maybe they're being held back at the quarterback spot here for a number of years.
I mean, they were so good on defense, at least the first half of the season. They ranked 121st in total offense, 109th in passing, and 99th in scoring. Spencer Petras and Padilla, I think, had 12 touchdowns, 11 interceptions combined. You just have to figure out a way to get more production out of your passing game. And I know Ferentz is as conservative as anybody, but, you know, they've got to figure out a way to put the ball in the air and down the field. And, you know, the coaching staff is what it is. So it's going to be even more difficult with Goodson leaving, because, you know, he was 1,100 yards, 6 touchdowns. He was their top guy at tailback. So, but I mean, the rest of that, you know, we'll see what happens with Wisconsin. Wisconsin and Auburn are the two teams I can never figure out going into a season. If I pick them to be mediocre, they're really good. If I pick them to be good, they're mediocre or worse. But, you know, Iowa's got at Rutgers, at Illinois, at Ohio State, at Purdue, at Minnesota. You know, it's not overly bearing on the road. So, we'll see.
Yeah. And again, they may go young with their quarterback spot. It's interesting, you know, Brian Ferentz, Kirk Ferentz's son and the offensive coordinator, you know, he hadn't worked with the quarterbacks, but with Ken O'Keefe moving into a different position in the program, you know, Brian is going to be directly coaching quarterbacks this season, which created a bit of a reaction in the Hawkeye fan base. And so interested to see how that evolves and whether maybe he'll be more willing to go with a younger option if Petras or Padilla don't make progress. Also really interested in your thoughts on Iowa State, because this time last year, you know, they were coming off of their best season ever, Fiesta Bowl win, a top 10 finish. They were preseason, you know, top 10, top 15, depending on where you look, and had a disappointing year. I mean, given what they had coming back and the number of guys that they're going to put into the league, Iowa State, you know, you thought they'd win certainly more than 7 games. And Matt Campbell, a lot of us thought would be gone by now, their head coach, whether it was USC or Oklahoma or Notre Dame. You know, those are all spots that some of us could see Matt moving on to. Instead, he's back in Ames, but with a team that I see has a lot of questions going into this season. What are your thoughts on the Cyclones, who, by the way, are in the Sweet 16 here in Chicago? Their basketball team has been a huge surprise, going from 2 wins last year to a Sweet 16 appearance. It's the biggest turnaround in college basketball history that I can find. What are your thoughts on where ISU goes from here?
Yeah, I think last year was clearly a disappointment. It's difficult, I think, for teams of Iowa State's caliber to put together back-to-back huge seasons. You kind of got to catch lightning in a bottle, and everything has to fall right. And I think it did in 2020 and didn't last year. But, I mean, when you're losing Breece Hall and Charlie Kolar and Purdy, you know, and people have their opinions on Purdy, I think he was a pretty good college quarterback. But, you know, there's a lot to replace. I agree with you. I thought Matt Campbell would be somewhere in the Big Ten or maybe even the NFL, given the personnel losses at Iowa State and the uncertainty with the Big 12. But he's been a guy that's really been loyal to Iowa State, which, you know, a lot of people haven't been in the past. So he's certainly not using it as a stepping stone. We'll see what happens after this coming season.
Yeah, no doubt. Be an interesting team to watch. And those are the four I teams. There's obviously some other I terms around college football. I formation, interception is a big one. A lot of teams make that a priority. But wanted to ask you about the Iron Bowl and just the history of that game. And I know you've covered several of them. You obviously spent most of your career in that part of the country. What stands out when you think about the Iron Bowl, whether it was a game, whether it was a player, a game that you covered, a game that you watched? It's just one of the games that I think we all pay attention to every year, no matter the records, but certainly in recent years, because of certainly Nick Saban's success, but also at times Auburn, you know, has been a team that we're paying attention to from a national standpoint.
I would have to say Harvey Updike.
Your guy.
I've covered some crazy stories, but that one was the craziest. And yeah, I can still remember writing the original column and, you know, found out about it and found out who it was and what his name was and that he was a former Texas State trooper. And I was able to get a phone number for his ex-wife. And she was like, he's Alabama crazy. You know, he's got a dog named Bear. He wanted to name our daughter Allie Bammer and I wouldn't let him do it. It just went on and on and on. And then I talked to him and he went on trial and the story kept getting crazier. And then I remember they sent him to, I remember right before Georgia played Alabama in the 2012 SEC championship game, I got a call from Tuscaloosa area code on my cell phone and didn't recognize the number. I thought maybe it was Kirby Smart or somebody calling from the Alabama football offices, but I answered the phone and I said, hello. And he said, Mark. And I said, yeah. He goes, this is Harvey Updike. You remember me? And I said, yeah. I said, Harvey, where are you? He said, they got me over here in this mental hospital in Tuscaloosa doing a mental evaluation as part of my court proceedings. He said, I get one phone call a week. He said, and I called you. He said, I got to ask. He says, can we beat Georgia on Saturday? I'm like, damn, man. You don't want to call your wife or kids? So I talked to him for about 20 minutes. And he hung up. I told him to have a great week.
God, unbelievable.
Just had too much Bama in him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just that rivalry. And look, Ohio State, Michigan's great. Georgia, Florida's great. Oklahoma, Texas is great. There's no rivalry with more venom and just disdain for the other side than that one. I mean, Paul Feinbaum became a millionaire off of it. And I mean, it's nuts.
And it's because so much of it's just the location, right? The fact that everybody's in the same state. It's not, you know, there's some separation between Michigan and Ohio State people, at least to some degree, but it's just unavoidable in that state of Alabama, right?
No, I mean, it's you choose the side about the whenever you can talk, you choose. When you're a toddler and you learn how to talk, you basically choose between Alabama and Auburn. I mean, it runs deep over there. And it is, I mean, and it's lack of other professional sports and, you know, of professional sports. And it's 365 days a year over there. It's insanity. And it's great. I mean, it's when it's healthy, which is rare, but when things don't get out of hand, it's a hell of a lot of fun.
No, I know. You kind of wonder what the next odd thing will be around that game. I mean, I don't think we'll ever top the Updike tree poisoning situation, but yeah, you just wonder what's coming next. Even last year's game was memorable because it looked like Auburn was going to win, and you know, and then Tank Bigsby goes out of bounds, and Alabama somehow comes back to win the game, and then all this stuff around Brian Harsin, who's still the Auburn coach for now. It's one of the more more unique situations just to monitor year round in college football. So definitely looking forward to this year's game. And up next, which is IJ. So Jay will be up next on next week's show. But Mark, thanks so much for joining me today and breaking down spring ball. Thanks to Sarah and Taylor and everyone else. And we'll be back with you next week on the ESPN College Football Podcast. Thanks so much for listening and downloading us.